Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
Oh, he's...
I think he thought he was.
Is he Jewish? Danny Thomas?
We just did this.
We just had this conversation.
Oh,
why would you have had a conversation about Danny Thomas being Jewish?
No, Danny Thomas, I was thinking of Danny from the singing bus family. What was that?
Danny Partridge.
Partridge?
But what was his real
name? Danny Bonaducci?
The singing bus family.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when you said Danny Thomas. Danny Thomas was the glass guy, right?
No, no, be more specific.
Coffee table.
The coffee table shitter. The coffee table shitter. No?
That's, yeah. I forget we are on a podcast. You're exactly right. Well, this is awkward.
No.
Are you ready?
Yep.
I'm Chick McGee, and we're off the air. Hi, Jess.
Hey.
Jess was laying down. Introduction. Hi,
I didn't
Jason.
Know how long it was going to take.
See my shirt?
So I thought I was going to take a nap.
And we're going to talk about the shirts. Yeah. This is Mike Doty. Trying to get him on the podcast.
3 inches above the floor. Man in the box wants to burn.
Let's play all his own guitar.
This is called Words.
And I'm tired.
I don't know about that. Maybe. He's pretty talented. He doesn't look anything like he sounds, as Jess pointed out.
He doesn't.
Kind of looks like the IT guy.
Mike, if you have representation, you like to call us and tell us to stop playing your music while we've got you on the phone. We'll say, hey, why not hang out for the podcast? Is everybody all right?
I like
everybody
it.
Okay?
Great.
I can hear
is this too sad for you?
Yeah, it is. Really sad. I'm sure he's a nice guy.
All right.
He has some upbeat stuff.
Does
right?
he? I would like to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have to start again?
To start
no,
the show
fuck
again?
No. Never mind. Play it next time.
Yeah, save it up.
Yeah, save it up.
You know, we've never had a fight on the podcast.
Why do you want to fight? Because I said your
fight.
Music was sad?
No, you're just kind of irritated.
No, I'm not. I'm in great mood.
You know what podcast this is?
69 all day.
And our special guest for 69, the episode number 69, is Ryan Dalton. What?
We should have played the 69 boys if that's what we were going to.
I'm not sure. I'm familiar with the 69 boys.
You're not?
Do you have a 69 boys song?
I might.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
Hey, how are you? Great to be here, man.
This had to happen one episode or another.
Mm-hmm.
Getting it started.
How long has it been since we've done a podcast, though, really?
A week.
It's been a long time.
It's only been a week?
Mm-hmm.
Feels
seems
like it's been for fucking
seems
ever.
Seems like for fucking ever. I've got a situation brewing in my head, so I'd like to talk about
uh-oh.
That if I could.
Oh, man. Go ahead.
I'm ready.
I just got called by my a phone call from my my oldest and dearest friend. His name's David Mabe, and he said, hey, there's somebody in my store, and I don't know if you want to talk to him or not.
It wasn't.
And I said, well, who is it? And he said, it's Mrs. Hildebrand. And I said,
oh, no way.
And I said, I just can't.
Yeah, you're going to lose it.
So what is it about me?
This was Chick's high school speech
teacher.
This
is my speech teacher. She's like my idol. She's...
Everybody had that teacher. Did you have that teacher?
No, I didn't.
Okay, except for you. Anyway, Chick, go on.
I was ignored. I was the casualty in the back of the room.
You're sweaty?
Thinking about it.
This just happened?
Yeah, it just happened right before I pulled into the parking lot. And I said, oh, David, I don't know. Did you tell her that you were calling me? And he goes, no. Absolutely not, because I didn't know if you could, and I just can't. And my other favorite teacher just passed away like last February or March, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him.
So what are you going to do? You going to drive to Ohio this weekend?
I don't.
You guys wrote, she wrote you a letter recently.
Didn't she write
you a letter?
Yeah, but I just don't. What is it about me that?
I think you wanted to save up crying for the podcast, right?
You don't want to cry in the car without your shirt on.
So what is it about me that?
He didn't have a shirt on when he pulled up.
Is that? I do drive like a hillbilly every now and then without my shirt, Ryan. Where are you on that?
I will go sleeveless if I'm driving cross country, but I still will wear the sleeveless shirt because at least I got to have some sort of dignity. I don't want to ever look down and see the rest of my body.
Okay.
So I like to keep my arms out because on my body, I would definitely put them points above the rest of my torso. so I can check out my arms. The rest of my body looks like a melting snowman. So right, that's why enough. I do it, covered up.
Fair enough.
Okay.
A hairy melted snowman?
Well, I'm not really hairy, but I do have, the hair on my chest has turned into the bat signal.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so if I raise this, you're going to see the actual bat signal.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm the mark of the beast.
I don't know.
It does say that in the Bible.
Yeah.
The
bat signal's the mark of the beast. And Doubting Paul. Is that still in here, Thomas? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Doubting Thomas.
So now I'm worried about why am I not mature enough to...
It's not maturity.
It's just, I was so
you're just
nervous
emotional
and anxious all at the same time, and I didn't know whether to pull over or throw up. I was... Or both.
That's not who I thought.
So being excited wasn't anywhere in there.
No, I mean, I want to talk to her and tell her how much she meant to me, and
then we need to do a mock.
But I don't know.
A mock Mrs. Hildebrand. Get it out of your system, and then when you see her, you'll be all right.
I don't even want to do that.
Is this a level of respect that you have for
yes.
this person, or a level of
this
fear?
This is the only adult who paid attention to him in high school and said, "Hey, you're worth something. You've got something to give back." You know, it's the only positive adult in his life as a kid.
Okay,
so that's what it is.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Up until her, adult and ogre were interchangeable in my life. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. And she's going to pass away, and I'm not going to talk to her. But I don't want that to be
and
the
then
outcome.
I'll
be off the hook.
Then you'll be off the hook.
Yeah,
but that's
you'll
not
show
what
her.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I thought that was a... I don't... Not that it would be a good thing, but...
It is a solution. There's no arguing that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but maybe here's...
Would you have her on the podcast to give her her due respect? And actually even be
and
an
I
inspiration
not,
to others?
And I would not be on.
You wouldn't?
I don't know. I feel like I would... I don't... Eh. I'm such a jerk.
Well, you could choose
her.
Not to be.
I could choose not to be, but
I should text her.
Yeah, you should text her. It's really impersonal. You can get your message across, and then when she texts you back, you can dodge the text.
I just,
I
you
think
know,
she
and
emails.
And I contacted her, and she
did
contacted
you see her
me
kids
back.
Recently?
I saw her grandson. I see her son all the time.
Right.
We had a kind of a rough start to the show, and I think that's got a lot to do with it. I'm just still
okay,
kind of out of
sync. Okay, but here's real fast.
I'm very delicate. I'm a delicate flower.
What else are you emotional about right now?
Not anything really.
Nothing? You're fine. Everything else is good?
Pretty much.
Before Mrs. Hildebrand, that situation, is it mm-hmm. T or D? Hildebrandt or D?
Hildebrand with D. A D.
Before that situation, what would you have said you were most emotional about?
I spent the afternoon yesterday with my son, and he was supposed to spend the night last night, and he decided not to.
And bailed?
And just kind of bailed. And that,
okay.
It wasn't upsetting, but it was...
I know, but you know how sometimes you have misplaced anger? Well, I think sometimes you can have misplaced emotion, and so maybe you are extra emotional about Mrs. Hildebrand because you had something else on your mind, and maybe that it would just kind of like... You kind of puke
bring
it, out
it out
there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just was like immediately terrified.
What are you terrified
of?
Yeah,
I don't. It sounds like it's nothing but a positive vibe with her.
But that's
well,
the
maybe
thing.
It's not. Maybe it's not terror. Maybe it's just being nervous and anxious. And
okay, what adult other than David's mom? What adult from your childhood is still living and positive in your life? None.
That'd be nobody.
That'd be nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, maybe that does have a lot to do
with
it.
And for someone who has no siblings, you know what I mean? So that would be, there's just a lot.
My parents are enough to join the circus.
Oh, yeah? what were their performance acts?
I feel like we need to get somebody in here to cheer him up.
Well, obviously, we should have saved, we can't save it for Dr. Will.
Save it for Dr. Will, yeah.
Anyway, fucking Ryan's here, so.
I'd really like to help you, but I grew up and my parents loved me. Everything was awesome, so I don't know what to tell you.
Who did we talk to, the comedian who said, because the theory is the cliche.
Somebody
is,
didn't pay attention to you.
Nobody paid attention, so we're
no,
all from
somebody.
Dysfunctional.
Because it's even, I think it can even be a female. Like a female can fuck you up in high school and then you're
totally.
There you go, yeah.
There's this one chick in my life.
To this day.
I've become better than the situation.
That's good.
I like that.
In high school, I was in high school love, which really isn't love. It's mm-mm. just, I wanted.
What is that?
I couldn't believe this.
You wanted to bone her so bad.
I did, but then on top of it, I felt I really had feelings because I didn't know, really, I hadn't been down this road. So you just assume it's love.
Mm-hmm.
And she would be really nice to me to my face, and then she would go behind my back and trash me to all my friends and stuff. And then I'd hear from them, and then I'd confront her, and she would deny it. And since I was so blinded, I would fall for it. Now, back then, she was cute, but since then, and then after college, when I saw like what other women looked like, and and like yeah. there was such a bigger population change, I started to like really get out of it. And then she ballooned, and then towards the end of college, she started emailing me like this stuff had happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like I still had these feelings, and I'm just like, you were like the meanest human being on earth to me, and I'm talking like a couple years, maybe a year ago, she sent another message like it was still high school. Like, listen, I just want to make up for those terrible. I'm like, I'm married to a fox. Like, you're a monster. Yeah. Like, you need to. Now you are in that place. I am in a better place now.
I was married to one of those.
That's, oh, yeah.
That's karma for you.
Yeah, totally.
Someone who presents something and they're entirely something else. And you have to hear about it third hand. Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that.
But Danny, do you think, Jason, did you have that girl in high school that you were just like, damn?
There was a couple girls I thought were attractive, but I never really...
You never had one break your heart?
I never dated a girl in high school.
You didn't?
Mm-mm. Hmm. One of the girls who was I kind of got close with was a girl I felt I was protecting because she was kind of in the smart girl, the smart kid group, but yet she had these... we called them grits, kind of redneck guys.
Oh, yeah.
She kind of had connections with those guys for some odd reason, and I just didn't like it. And I saw that they were kind of pulling her out at times, and then so I, in a buddy way, kind of because I took her to, I asked her to prom early, so none of those guys could kind of thing. And we literally were just friends.
Right.
JC's her name. She's a great, great friend of mine. And so that's one example, I guess.
Well, you learned that was a good gut reaction, because anytime a chick is friends with lots of dudes, that's a red flag.
Usually,
that's a warning flag. I'd say 90% of the time, that's a red flag.
And she had a bunch of girlfriends too, but for some reason, those guys seemed to be.
Was she a 4-H'er? Maybe that was
No, I don't know.
No,
why.
Really?
No,
that would draw.
No, she was not.
Oh, okay.
Huh. That's weird.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I had one of those that I just tried way too hard with, you know.
In high school, she was awful.
She was just, well, you know.
Yeah, I saw the picture and I was like, are you fucking serious?
Well, now she looks like a heavy Chris Farley.
A heavy Chris Farley. Good.
But even at the time, she wasn't, looking back now and seeing it.
No, we were going through your yearbook and I was like, you should have liked her. She's fucking hot.
Yeah, there were a couple. There were a bunch of those, but those I was just stupidly devoted or whatever the hell I was going through.
But then. I think that wrecks a guy for life. Like it changes, like you said this before, it changes your DNA. It changes your outlook on love forever.
It definitely does. I do reference that from time to time because that situation always comes up as a reference point.
Right.
You're not going to take advantage of me in that way ever again.
Right. Yeah. So it's not like you're still carrying it around, but you remember it. You know what I mean? Like that's good, I think. I don't know. Yeah, well, you're the same way. You can be right back there.
See, that's what my problem is, Ryan. You're thinking about moving to LA to be an actor and all this.
I'm definitely thinking about it.
Well, see, I could probably, because I can, if I think of a situation or an incident, I'm right back there emotionally.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's not a good thing.
It's really neat if you date him and he does that.
You kind of go through.
It's really helpful.
I keep my panic attacks, like you had just mentioned. I'm thinking about moving to Los Angeles, and last night I had a legitimate panic attack, like couldn't breathe. I don't get them.
We're on your own.
I was on my bed in the hotel room, like, and I was going to sleep, and my wife texted me about the calendar, and then what set it off? Most comics, when they see a blank spot in their calendar, it's like, air, no money coming in, help me. And then I started to think about the things I got to do, and then I started to. I'm working with this really, really funny comic at the downtown Crackers, Pete Davidson. He's 19 years old and hilarious.
Wow. Whoa, really?
And it's not just, hey, he's funny for a night. It's like, he's legitimately funny. I've seen enough comedy to tell you, like, I was literally going, oh, shit, this kid's got jokes. Oh my God. I'm 37 years old. I've been doing this for 10 years. I don't have enough TV credits. I'm never going to. And then all of a sudden it just starts snowballing. Oh. But I don't want to let my wife know that I'm like, I can't.
Right.
I can't breathe right now because this never really happens. And like I was spiraling out of control. And this, and it was nerve wracking for me. Definitely last night. Mm-hmm. And I feel better now.
You're okay now.
Good.
Yeah. I got a grip on things. I got a grip
on
things.
Okay. So you're okay.
Yeah. I'm okay. I bet. Yes.
Well, we need to get me.
Well, we have someone on the phone.
Back to being okay. Who
Why?
Is it?
I think someone called us.
Who?
On purpose?
Are you there, friend?
Yes, I'm here.
It's Dr. Will.
Oh, Dr. Will. Thank goodness you're on the phone.
Okay.
Who am I with here other than Chick and Jess and Jason?
Ryan Dalton, a world-renowned standing-up comedian.
Excellent comedian. Good for you, Ryan.
Well, thank you, Dr. Will. I appreciate that your standards are low.
I did 20 years of nightclub comedy before I aged out of it. I admire it just because you do it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Will, the reason for the call today is I don't know if it's unique, but it has never happened to me at this level before. Mm-hmm. My best friend in high school owns a store, and my speech teacher, who I've been trying to talk, I've actually...
Corresponded with her
a couple times, and I wanted to go over and visit with her. And to be quite honest, I was a little bit nervous about that because I...
Well, she's 80-something.
Well, because I don't know why I'm nervous about it. I guess that's why we're... So he says, hey, Mrs. Hildebrand's at my store right now. Do you want to talk to her? He's on the phone. And I go, oh, gosh, David, I don't think I can. I don't... So what is that about? I mean, I was just really nervous and sweating and... Like, I can't do this. I can't tell her how much she meant to me and how much she helped me.
Well, you know, it's an anxiety attack. A panic attack is anxiety, you know, writ large. It's just, you know, you kind of cycle up and cycle up, and it's a control issue. And obviously you feel like you would not be in control of your emotions when you encountered her, which, of course, makes me want to, you know, do something we can't probably do on the phone, which is to say, well, maybe I can. I mean, what? What did she represent to you? Who was she again? She was a teacher?
I don't know. No, I do know. I mean, she was...
She was a healthy adult who told Chick he was worth something and he could do something and his ability. And this was the only adult that did this when he was growing up, and she's still alive. And he doesn't.
Wow. How old were you when you were with her, when you were around her?
16, 17, 18.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Personal identity. I mean, that's a critical age for you. I mean, who am I? What am I? I mean, mm-hmm. Of course. You'd feel rocked because, you know, you had 16 years of basing your sense of self on one set of information that was toxic, and now all of a sudden someone who's trustworthy is coming in and going, everything you know about yourself and have ever known about yourself is completely wrong.
Yeah, and she listened to my opinions and thought I was funny. Mm-hmm, and
Well, I could tell you this. Every other voice earlier than that contradicted that was wrong, and she's right.
Well, so
did you talk to her? Did you actually encounter her?
No, I didn't talk to her on the phone. I couldn't. I'm going to wrestle with that now and beat myself up about that for a little while first.
No, you know, Chick, you know what? This would be a really good opportunity for you sometime when you're alone is to write out a letter to her. Whether you decide to send it or not is not important right now. But I would just really journal and kind of let this flow out. And just let it unleash for you to see what it is that, you know, this raises for you. You can then choose to call her or not. That'd be really therapeutic to be in contact with her. Can you imagine her in her 80s, what it would mean to her to have somebody say, you know what, I grew up and a lot of what I heard about myself was that I didn't have value. And you, just in a couple of sentences, rocked my world and altered my sense of myself. How do I even thank you for that? You know what? She'll go on to glory, having seen that and felt that as a very profound gift.
Yeah, Chick, why don't you think about her for a second? Unbelievable. Me, me, me.
Me, me, me. I'm struggling with this. What do I do?
I'm struggling with your compliment.
the good thing is, Ryan, you're absolutely right, but the good thing is you both come out of it feeling better.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know. I know, Dr. Will. I know. I mean, I. And then a lot of me is like, well... I'm supposed to be, you know, working on me or whatever, becoming a better person, and then I run into this roadblock, and it's awful.
Well, you're in transitions. I mean, some of this sounds cliche. Ryan, did I hear, understand before I got on the phone that you're thinking about making a big transition to L.A.?
That's correct.
I mean, seriously, life transitions are humongous. And, you know, here's the thing, and Chick and Jess and Jason hear me talk about this all the time. One of the things I've become really convinced about as a psychologist is the necessity for having support around you. And oftentimes Americans put too much narrow focus on their significant other, you know, kind of you complete me, that stuff. And I'm not cynical about that at all, you know, your relationship with your significant other. But we have grossly underestimated in our individualistic culture how crucial it is to have a broader support system that helps us cope with what we can't control. And moving to another place or transitioning to anything rattles and rocks our sense of control. We don't have control. And, you know, how do you cope with that? It's not about the stress. It's about the coping and other people or who help you cope.
Well, I hear that, but I'm also disappointed in my own self-reliance and confidence and maturity and on and on and on, you know? And I thought I was a lot farther along than what I am, and...
Oh, I don't think that's for you to judge.
It's one day. It's one yeah. incident. It's this isolated incident right now.
Right.
It's not forever. It's this, and this is a new hurdle, and it's a positive hurdle. It's not negative. It's not bad. Nothing bad is going to come from this.
Yep, Jess, you're absolutely right. You know, my wife Sally, who's had a long career working with the area of grief and loss, she talks about a domino effect. She said, when you've had some real losses in your past, and you're not thinking about them day to day, and you're just kind of moving along, what happens is you become particularly vulnerable when a new situation arises. That it sort of connects you unconsciously to past experiences. The present experience inflates itself into something large because it kind of like carries you back to all of the previous losses. She says, come forward. So this encounter with this old teacher who said something nice to you obviously is causing an emotional reaction that's completely out of proportion to what it was. A sweet little old lady who thought you were terrific correctly. And you're having a reaction. So like if you think about a scale of 0 to 10, and 10 is a complete eruption of emotion,
yeah.
Something like that should have caused a 2. Because you're feeling it at a 7 or an 8 right. means that between 2 and 8, something's going on.
Well, you know what? And Jess asked me before we got you on the phone, that she said, what were you thinking of, or where were you when David called you and told her that she was in his store? And I'm remembering now that I was having a really good day.
You were having a
really
good
day. I was like...
Yeah.
No, I was listening to music, and albeit really sad music, but I was listening to music, and I had a great show, and I got some stuff to do later today, and I'm looking forward to that, and it was like la-di-da-di-da, and like wham!
But I think, too, that in understanding how your mind works a little bit more is that you're not really... Mrs. Hildebrandt doesn't represent Mrs. Hildebrandt and the positive force that she was. All you're thinking of is that you had shit parents when Mrs. Hildebrandt was around. That's what's upsetting you right now, is that you're going to the negative place. Like, I wish I felt this great about my parents, but I don't. I feel this way about this other woman. So celebrate
Touché.
This other woman. That's okay.
Touché, Jess.
We know who your parents were.
Touche. That's really that. What you're talking about, Jess, is exactly right, because that's the psychological or the intellectual premise of psychoanalysis. It's the associations. It's like what was happening just prior to that, you know, that caused that. And she's right. It's made a connection for you about something good. No,
yeah.
This good thing connected you to something right. bad. That's all bullshit, chick.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm here to tell you. And this is it's a wonderful thing. These are the experiences that push you forward.
Yeah.
I need to be pushed. Maybe out into traffic. What do you think of that, Dr. Will? What do I feel like? Well, thank you, Will, very much, as always. And we still need to meet. Where is it? Like Logansport? We could meet for lunch. Where's the middle?
No, Zionsville would work.
Oh, Zionsville. That's perfect.
You guys go to Christie's house.
Yeah, that won't happen.
Have a little picnic.
Anyway.
Christie's.
I've got to get back to my melting down psychotic patient now.
Okay. Thank you for putting me first there, Dr. Will.
Okay,
I appreciate
buddy,
it.
Always, man. All right. Ryan, good luck, buddy. And when you get out there to L.A., remember, it's not just about the love of your life, your wife, and whatever. It's like, you know, get connected as fast as you can to other comics.
Oh, without a doubt. That's what was my first move when I was out there for
you'll
3 months,
great.
Just getting around comics.
You'll do great. You'll do great. Okay, good luck, guys.
Thanks, Dr. Bye-bye. Will.
Thanks, Dr.
Bye,
Will.
Dr.
Appreciate
Will.
It. Thank you.
Dr. Will Miller, as always, wonderful. Okay. Ryan, I feel bad. You
walked into a shit.
You walked
storm.
Into a shit.
No,
storm
I like
you had
this.
No idea.
I like mean, to see. I don't know you as personally as I've liked to. I only see you when I come in here. But this
right.
is
well, we
it's
hung
good
out.
To hear.
We stalked you kind of for a little bit.
That
there.
Was yeah. funny. That was
that
funny.
Was awesome. Yeah. That was one of the better weekends I had in comedy. To be honest to God, truth.
It was. It totally happened by accident. We saw you in Louisville.
No, we saw him. Do we see you in Columbus with
it was
Greg
Columbus
Warren?
With Greg Warren.
Yes. We saw you in Columbus with Greg Warren, and that was on purpose because we went to see Greg, but we didn't know you were the feature.
Right.
And then it's like, you were like, hey, and then like a week later or 2 weeks later?
2 weeks later.
We were in
and
Louisville.
And we didn't tell you
Louisville
were coming.
Or Lexington?
No, it was Louisville.
Louisville.
Yeah, that club's closed now.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It was in such a perfect location.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Lots of traffic.
But yeah. We kind of freaked you out when you turned around and saw us.
Yeah, that was weird. It was definitely a bright spot for the weekend. I'll tell you what. That
was the
time.
Alcohol slushy place, right?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
kept the front of it open, I assume.
Of course. Yeah. Slushy drinks are always going to sell.
Isn't
alcoholic
that,
slushy drinks is how you make money.
What does that say about comedians in general, that a nightclub, a
right.
can't survive, but a place that sells alcoholic slushies is always...
Comics don't taste as good as slushy drinks.
I guess.
I'm guessing mismanagement in one.
Pretty,
and it was a nicer
sphere.
Club.
It was. It was really nice.
It was beautiful. Smelled
was
great.
Nice.
I was there like the first,
smelled
second
great.
Week.
They had a good green room. I always joke about
green
room.
Big
yeah.
TV.
Yeah.
And the crowds were weird. I will say that. Like, I remember getting on stage and doing my stuff. I'm like, I get more laughs here. And I never had a show there where it was just monstrous. It was always like... You are holding back, or you guys know something I don't know. It was always like, it was very bizarre. And the whole, I've been there, what, 3 times, and that was always my experience. So I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
So did you just tell Dr. Will that you'd been in...
You went to L.A. for a little bit?
No, you call it, you've only been in comedy for 10 years? Is that what
I
heard you say?
No, I've been a comic for, I'll go ahead and say 15, but as like a professional, only my job, 10.
Mm.
Like from October 1st of this year will be 10 years. It'll be a decade of doing this.
Wow.
What were you doing before then?
Immediately before that, I was selling cards. What's it going to take for me to get you into this Hyundai today?
No.
Press hard, 3 copies.
Did I know that?
Really?
That's right. I used to move metal out there.
New cars?
Did?
Yeah. I could put you into a brand new Subaru with some gray guts and a bone thrower, some new feet on it. What do you
think? Did you really sell Subarus?
I sold Subaru, Volkswagen, and Hyundai.
Did you really?
That's right.
You seem entirely too sarcastic to be a car
I
salesman.
I was. And my God bless him. I actually texted my general manager before. Now he's like this part owner of this huge auto group now. Mm-hmm. And we're still friends. He knew early on that I was better suited for comedy than I was for.
Right.
Because I would, when I would go work at the dealership, I would take the best parts of me, you know, the parts that you use on stage, and I would delete them from my personality. And I would just become this super regimented, non-personality based. I knew everything about every car, but I mean, you wouldn't want to buy something from me because I wasn't friendly. I was very boring. Like, the specs on the engine are this, and he would just pull me aside, like, you don't even need to know where the windshield wiper. You just got to use your personality, and that's what people buy. And
right.
So I wouldn't have huge car months. All the guys around me who didn't know anything about the car would, but I felt like you had to be super professional. Mm-hmm. And after I realized, when you realize a car dealership is like a pirate ship when it comes to its employees,
yes.
I should have probably been more like them.
See, that ticks me off because the guys that don't know much about the cars are the ones selling them. Is that
yeah.
what you're saying?
Yeah, well, they
well,
don't
but
care.
Jason
See,
is
would,
not like your regular car
I
purchaser.
Would go in and
yeah.
I would, my goal is to know more than you.
Right, of
and
course.
So I would go, what about-
As
and,
a car salesman
would,
or as a customer?
As a customer.
I know.
Right.
See, yeah, he would research the fuck out of a car that he wasn't even going to buy.
Why does right. that anger so, you? Why does
doesn't.
That anger you?
Because you spent so much time looking it up. Let them tell you.
But look, he's just proving my point. If I
Where
get one of the, if I get one of the
this.
Other
Were you
guys,
in Cleveland?
If Wait. I get one of the other guys, they don't know what. See, if I leave it up to those dickheads, there's something
reason,
I don't want.
There's no
now,
reason
if I found Ryan,
here.
I'd be cool.
When I get, but here's the thing, and this is the truth in what my general manager would say. He's like, "Look, man, you are missing out on money because I would study to get to know everything about these cars, and then you walk in, and when it gets down to the deal, you're hammering me down to the last penny, and then I'm not making a big commission. It's the people who walk in, and they fall in love with somebody's personality that all of a sudden they're forking over way more money than they should. And I know that's a crappy way to look at it, but my commissions were low because I dealt exclusively with people who knew every nut and bolt about the car. And then when it came down to the deal, I mean, it'd be like, oh, we sold it a dollar over the cost of the car. Great. Awesome. I'll not feed myself this week.
What do you think being a car salesman's training ground for being a comedian?
I think it might be 1,000%.
It might be the best job to have. If I think there are a lot of people out there selling cars that could be stand-up comedian.
I learned more as a car salesman.
I disagree. I worked at a car dealership.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in high school. I was in high school. I had a high school girl's body. I was in high school, and I worked in the parts department at a fucking car dealership. Ooh. I don't know what my dad was thinking. He may as well threw me in the middle of like a fucking boy school or something.
Was it like...
Oh, the filthy.
Just these werewolves coming up to you. Hey, I'd like to check out your parts.
Yeah, I was just... Yeah, it's just... I couldn't believe...
Need your rear end greased.
I'm pretty confident. I was 16. I'm confident that that's where it started. My sarcasm and my... I could put up that wall and be like, I fucking dare you to say something stupid.
Right.
Look at that look on her face.
Yeah.
She can drum that up at any time.
And unfortunately, I carried that around all through college and could not get a guy to hit on me to save my fucking life. Like, I just never, like, the look never went away.
And it's all because of car. Maybe that's, car dealers are very important in this country. Think about it.
They are.
Oh, without a doubt.
The gross national product.
I love a lot of car dealers. I dislike a lot of car. But you said that when you were talking about comedians and a lot of the car dealers that I've dealt with, I shouldn't say that. I don't know what I should say now because I don't want to.
I will say this. I've dealt with a lot of car dealers and in Indianapolis. I've been here for 30 years, so I've pretty much talked to everybody, and they've all been pretty okay and nice with me. But that doesn't, I guess that doesn't say anything because they can't really.
But Chick has always said, too, that this is
the best.
One of the best perks of his celebrity is.
Other than the poon,
right.
the best perk is that you can call somebody and go, hey, I'd like a doobie-doobie and a 1942, whatever you'd like, and can you mail that over here? And they drive it over, and it's really.
Do you think car dealers?
Oh wow!
Do
so your experiences have been epic and dreamlike.
Yes.
Oh my god!
Yes.
It must be you then.
Hey, ask this guy who was just driving the 7 Series BMW.
Oh, I'm gonna throw
the $100,000 fucking car for 2 weeks.
Oh, that's great. Demos.
Yeah.
Demos.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe we should take this opportunity to say, if you like the podcast, why don't you either email or call a Dreyer and Reinbold BMW, the North Side or South Side, and tell them Chick and Jess, we're talking about BMW, and maybe they'd like to be a sponsor here for the podcast.
Could.
I can tell you this about the car business that has changed since I was there, because once again, I still keep in contact with that general manager.
And you still drive cars.
I still drive them, but the negotiation part is now starting to be kicked out of the whole deal.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And all these dealerships collectively, this is something they should have done years ago, is that they've gone to one price, no negotiation, which is kind of funny because, wait a minute, I was the consumer. Before I had to come in here and negotiate my price of my car. Now you're telling me what I'm paying for the car?
Yeah.
Right.
But all the car dealerships are now adopting it, so it's kind of like their front against that. And nobody really does like to negotiate, but in my head, I'm like, I know how to buy a car now, so I kind of want to negotiate.
You want to negotiate. But I think that, too, there's the price. Like, this is how much you're going to pay for this car, and then the negotiation or whatever comes in when they're like, and we're going to tint your windows, and we're going to do this, and that's where it's like, oh, so actually I'm getting my car for this, but I would pay this. So you really do, I mean, they just fucking...
And the few times that I dealt with them as a civilian, a car dealer as a civilian.
Wow.
civilian.
They couldn't tell me how much the car cost.
Right, of course.
No, it's like, well, how many years would you like to finance? Well, your monthly payment, we can get that done.
Yeah, that monthly payment crap. Yeah. I hate that.
Close them on the payment. That's what they used to say.
What's your payment now?
I hate that.
Well, we'll get you a new car for less than that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're going to pay, 12% interest, but...
Right, that's fine.
At my dealership, I learned the first lesson about value. The Volkswagen, the convertible Beetle came in, and
the convertible,
yep. And they parked the first one right on the sales floor. And what they did was there was the sticker price of the car. Now, when a newer car came in, it was much like you're not gonna discount. It's a newer car, so you're gonna pay sticker. So they took another sticker and they put it besides the MSRP sticker from the manufacturer. Right. Mm-hmm. It's called an addendum. And they marked up the car $11,000 over sticker. Now, if you're anybody with two brain cells, you walk in, you're like, oh, look, the new Beetle convertible. This is awesome, man. How much does this car cost? Well, you know, this is the price of the car. Okay, that's awesome. What's this sticker over here? Well, you know, there's, you know, we're raising the price of the vehicle because you can go, fuck yourself. I'm not paying that. So people would sit there and point and they'd yell at you. And I mean, look, you're the salesperson. You just got to take it. So I would watch a month of this happen. So one day I'm just standing there by the car, no traffic in the dealership. This older lady comes in, but I can tell she's not an idiot. She walks in. She goes, oh my God. The Beetle convertible is finally out. I've been waiting for this car, and I'm bracing because you know you're just waiting for that sticker, not even shock, but sticker anger to hit her.
Sticker anger.
She looks at the sticker, and she looks back at me, and she goes, how much are my payments going to be on this? And I'm like, I'll be right back to find that out. And this woman was an attorney. She made a lot. She probably made $85,000 a year. It's not shabby.
Right.
And she just wanted that car for so long. She didn't care. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting next to a veteran in the car business for 25 years. He walked up to me and went, you just landed the biggest catfish in the whole fucking lake.
Yeah.
And my commission on that car, on that deal, was $6,000.
Wow.
Yeah, because it was the highest grossing deal the whole dealership had ever seen.
What?
And to this day, they call it the Dalton.
Yeah, the Dalton.
I like that.
Is that a Dalton?
That's such a good last name for something like that, to name.
He gave her the Dalton.
After. Yeah.
He gave her the Dalton.
Hell yeah, I did.
That sounds nice, though. That doesn't sound bad.
Did you ever pick up any potential customers?
Oh, yeah, you're damn right.
I did?
Hell yeah.
Ryan.
Closed them hard. Because the Volkswagen Jetta, I don't know about now, but I remember the Volkswagen.
I drove a Jetta.
There you go.
White
cute girls,
Jettas.
Cute girls.
Cute girls and white Jettas.
Red Jettas. The cutest girl. Yeah.
Cute girls love Jettas, and also Daddy's Little Angel loves Jettas.
Oh, gosh. Yep. Right there. Right there next to you.
And as soon as they closed the deal, and I was all nice to them, sprinkling the goodwill of the new car. The new car smell is much, it's very much an aphrodisiac.
Aphrodisiac.
Okay. Yes. And yes, I went on several dates with several girls I closed.
That's cute that you said
now
dates.
Did she pick you up in her new car?
It's a girl I signed up for.
Did you christen the car?
No, I never did that because
fucking liar.
I swear I've never.
Not even
that.
Over never the waistband that. Handy.
I took her on a date and then I closed and opened her. You know what I'm saying?
There you go. Well, that's disgusting, Ryan.
Well, hey, man.
Hey, I asked. I'm sorry. Hey. I asked.
No. Did you ever drive? Did you drive a Volkswagen?
No, that was the. I had a car. I got a really nice. At the time, it was a really nice used car. I've never had a new car because I knew how cars depreciate. So what I would do is get a car that had a few thousand miles on it, but then the depreciation already hit it. So you'd get this luxury car for like a normal new car price.
Right.
Right.
And it was a Mazda Millennia. I called it the Millennia Falcon. That's right. Suede interior.
Is it kind of a two-seater?
No, it was a four-seater.
That's
it was
the Miata.
Mazda tried to compete with Lexus, the ES300, by coming out with their own, but nobody bought it. Okay. But, I mean, this car, I mean, it was a 2000. I mean, it had suede interior, premium sound, six-disc changer. It was fast, but it was one of these engines that was so intricate that if something went wrong with it, you were paying through the nose.
$1,000.
Oh, all day.
Yes. Everything costs $1,000.
Yeah, when anything goes to shit on my car,
$1,000. I abandoned it because I couldn't take fixing it. So yeah.
So what's missing in your heart that you feel like you have to move to Los Angeles?
Well, I mean, God damn it, man. This is what I mean. I literally. It's one of the, I'm glad Dr. Will said that about like it's not about your spouse because in my heart I'm like I'm if I go to Los Angeles I'm not just going, I'm taking my wife with me, I'm taking away from her family and the friends thing doesn't bother me so much because the majority of her friends moved away and got married and stuff like that. It's that's a guilt I feel and a pressure, like I have to succeed because if I don't I will have I will have made this person get out of their comfort zone. They're happy doing what they're doing, and then go to the West Coast. And it's not like you just go buy a house on the West Coast. The house is super expensive out there. And I'm taking, and we're basically taking our lives and compressing them into some crappy apartment, probably next to where some homeless guy's taking a dump. And that's a pressure I feel. And the reason I feel like I need to do that is it's 10 years in, and I'm just, I thought by now with the advent of the internet and how easy you can get in front of decision makers with video clips of your performance and resume, that it would be easier. But it's still like they don't take you seriously unless you live in a certain zip code. And that is, infuriates me. I can't tell you. It's like, it doesn't matter. If you're funny, you're funny. You know, I always, if you have the experience, that should get you the job, but it's just not the case.
That's something that we ran into.
I hate it.
The Bob and Tom show over and over. It's, well, we're in Indianapolis. That's where we're based. So there are, believe it or not, people in Los Angeles, New York, and wherever who...
That you need to move to a coast.
Yeah, and they're like, "Where? Who are you guys? Bob and Tom? Oh, what? Really?" But then, like, somebody like the cast from... the show that you've been on with Roy Wood, Sullivan...
Sullivan and Sons.
They all come in, and then I'm sure it's not a coincidence, and I'm sure we didn't do it all by ourselves, but the whole cast, and they have the biggest rating they've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, after they... I mean, I don't know why we have to be...
Tim Wilson says that you're going to reach more people being on the Bob and Tom show in the morning than you ever would with Letterman or Leno.
Nick Griffin said that to me. He goes,
Nick Griffin said that?
He goes, I was on David Letterman 5 times, and he's like, that Bob and Tom show has done more for my career than being on television multiple times on my, you know, dream show. And he doesn't, Nick Griffin says maybe 3 words to a comic he's just working to. So that meant something.
Right.
Well, and then we hear, you know, we always hear about, you know, Howard Stern, and he's the syndicated morning show, or who else is out there? Like Dan Patrick or Mike and Mike or whoever it is. Mm-hmm. And we have twice the listeners that all those guys do.
And
you never hear about us. I mean, if there's
how many more Marconis do you guys have too?
Yeah. And if there's a radio article in People or Entertainment Weekly or whatever that Howard Stern said that, but they never ask us for, and I honestly do think it's a bias because we're a bunch of hillbillies doing radio. I think there are some people who think that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. It's terrible, but I don't disagree with you.
But if it's good and it's funny and people like it, I mean, why does it have to be from the Los Angeles studios of the Bob and Tom show? I mean,
you'd never make anybody happy because everybody that has listened to you guys since 81, 85, 86, whatever you want to say, is... They would be so pissed off if you guys relocated to a coast. Mm-hmm. They would feel abandoned. I mean, this is your niche.
Well, the hot button is, and I feel like this today, and I'm just going to say it. The hot button is crazy. Well, when the Bob and Tom show went syndicated in 1995, they left Indianapolis behind. They're just ignoring Indianapolis. They're ignoring Indiana. And that's not true. I mean, we made a conscious decision to, like, we're going to sound more national. We're going to try to not worry about the Keystone exits.
And we've said this before. How many nationally syndicated shows do a local break after their syndication for the zero?
Or just for Indianapolis?
Zero.
They're out
there. Zero.
But we're not going to say that Keystone exits closed on 465 because you know the Noblesville police or a school's been closed or whatever. We can't do that. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. We could probably. I could do it.
Sneak that in.
I might sneak
show.
That in.
Sneak that in.
The 465 is closed at the Keystone exit. Yeah. No, but it's just it doesn't make me mad, but it's kind of irritating, and we're just doing the best we can.
But isn't your wife a nurse?
She is a nurse, and that's
so she's
the thing.
Good. So that's good. I mean, she can work anywhere, really.
The reason this even came up is the Sullivan and Son guys. Steve Burns, one of my best friends. We went to college together.
I'm not familiar with him.
I
know.
He's that Asian wannabe, right?
Yeah, that Asian wannabe.
Is he still doing the Asian
thing? He's one of the crazy 88 from Kill Bill.
Those guys are great.
Yeah. He's like, look, you got to come to Los Angeles. I know you don't want to hear this. You got to come out here. You're just going to watch people rocket past you because they take risks. And, you know, I'm like, oh, no, I have my theory. But I started to see when I was out there how right he was. Mm-hmm. And then You know, they confronted like him and two of the other guys from Sullivan's Son, Ahmed and Owen. They confronted my wife, and she was putting up the fight. And I was worried she was going to think I put them up.
To that.
Right. I told her. I even went up to her, I'm like, I want you to know, I did not put them up to this. Mm-hmm. I would never do that. And the next day, she was like, no, they had a really good case. And you know, I started looking into like what I would do. And I'd had this discussion with her before, and she was very much like, no,
we're not moving.
Yeah, you need to have like you'd have to have like a writing job on something. And I'm like, oh, that's easy to get from Cleveland. That shouldn't be a problem. There's no competition in L.A. But she became very open to it.
Wow. So what was their approach? Did they kind of play to her emotions or was it just a different voice?
Steve just was rational. He was just like, Steve was just like, look, if you're not going to be able to make the connections or meet the people, I mean, you're shoulder to shoulder with decision makers, mm-hmm. and people and comics that are in movies. And if they like your act, they'll include you in things. And that's how it just blossoms and networks.
Well,
and
that's
stuff
how
like
everybody on Sullivan and Sons got jobs. Those are all Steve's friends.
That's absolutely
that's
right.
He sold it. He became friends with Vince Vaughn and he had this idea for a show, and let's put Owen and Ahmed and Roy Wood Jr., and let's put them on.
Is Vince Vaughn behind that?
Mm-hmm. He's the executive producer of the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Steve even had that moment where, like, he moved back from Los Angeles. He moved to Chicago because he's married, and he wanted to move to a great city, and he still wanted to be a comic, and his wife is from Minnesota, mm-hmm. and so that we could be closer to the family. And then, when the show got picked up, they had to move back to L.A., and even my wife's like, well, you still had to move to Chicago from L.A.? He was like, yeah, but I would have never gotten the show in the first place had I not made that connection, and that's what hit her between the eyes.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Plus, I think... most people will think that an Asian is more intelligent and offers a level-headed.
Why you do that?
Facts and argue. I'm. It's a compliment, don't you think?
Mm. Yeah.
I'm waiting for him to come out like Louis C.K. said that he was. He was half Mexican. Like, I'm waiting for Steve Byrne to be like, hey, I'm half Indian. You know, like it's just that weird random.
Well, we're still kind of upset with all the guys on Sullivan and Son.
Yeah, they stood us up.
They stood us up twice.
Oh, really?
They were supposed to all be on the show, and then they wanted them to go to a Cubs game.
No, they said their flight was canceled. They're not going to make it down. And then it's like, we're at the Cubs game. And I was like, well, of course you stayed in fucking Chicago. You're all Cubs fans.
Little fact about me, I broke plans with my wife to come down a day early to be on the show, so...
To this show?
No, to...
The Bob and Tom Show.
Yes.
Okay, good.
I broke plans. I said, honey, I know we have dinner, and it's a romantic place, and I set these plans up, but I got to go tell dick jokes in Indianapolis on the air.
Was it your anniversary?
No.
Good. Was it any kind of anniversary?
Well, she works third shift.
Oh, okay.
She works third shift, mm-hmm. and
that's
then even
anyway.
If I'm at home... Yeah. Even if I'm home, like, hey, I'm home, she's sleeping till mm-hmm. 6.
Right.
And then even on that day off, like the next day off, it means that the sleep schedule's screwed. So that day's kind of a wash. So that means the other 2 days are really important.
Right.
I threw her a 30th birthday party. She turned 30 this weekend. And
awesome.
I threw her a surprise party. She didn't know. I
mean, well done.
I was clocking home runs in the PR department.
Out of the park.
Right. She couldn't believe it. And then, like, we were very much in love, and we were very close. I mean, you know how it is when the ether is floating, mm-hmm. and we're just very cuddly, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's going to be some action. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then I was like, oh, it's so on. It's going to be great, and everything's going well. And then I get a phone call, like, hey, could you come in a day early and do the show? And I'm like, and I know how important it is, and I'm just like, I gotta go, honey. I know we have plans. And if you could have seen it's like her face changed color.
No.
And I'm literally on the phone. I'm like throwing stuff around the house because I knew it's on me. And I'm like flipping tables over. And yeah. And but I'm like, I gotta go. And she's like, no, it's really important. You do gotta go. But I mean, the whole drive here that day early, I'm just like, I'm such a fucking asshole. I can't believe I can't, you know. But hey, man, what are you gonna do?
You got a supportive wife. You're lucky.
Yeah.
You're very lucky.
Yeah. Good for you.
I was okay with her when she took days off to drive to Baltimore to see Justin Timberlake. Yeah. You think you have jealousy issues? Shit.
Oh, my God.
I'm jealous of a pop superstar.
Well, sure. Well, he's a good guy.
She took a Greyhound bus back to save money.
By herself?
I wouldn't take a Greyhound bus to the Playboy Mansion if I were. Are you crazy?
Maybe.
Greyhound bus. That's a jealousy
issue. I've never been on a Greyhound
bus.
Yeah.
Well, keep that streak alive.
Have you at some point been on a bus?
She was trying to convince me.
Jess, have you been on a Greyhound bus?
No, I had a friend. Nick and Chrissy took their daughter on a Greyhound bus for her birthday. She was a toddler, and she's like, I want to ride a bus. And they're like, okay. So they rode the bus around the city.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, yeah, that's all right.
Oh, I have been on a metro. I've been on a bus here in town.
Yeah, I've done that. I've done that in Cleveland, and in Chicago. Public transportation mm-hmm. in yeah. the bigger cities is no big deal.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I think that was, when I think of a bus, I think of a Tom Petty concert, and I got in an argument with...
I think it was Mary. No.
And I walked out of the concert, and she drove, and I had to take the bus.
God, isn't that the worst, though, when you get into a fight with someone and one of you leaves, and then you have that feeling until you get home that it's like, fuck, we got to deal with this when I get home. I don't know. I hate the walkout.
Or not.
I hate the walkout.
Like 3 or 4 days, and then nothing
And then
happened.
You don't talk about it, yeah.
Nothing
you could do that, too.
That'd be fine. Possible.
I haven't had that fight.
Ever?
You've never had that fight with your wife?
I haven't had that fight because
your wife's
not
a real person.
Public
if you're
fighter.
No public fighting.
I don't like
ever.
Public fighting. Ever. I've come close a couple times, but I'll dial it back, and I'm like, oh, in my head, I'm like, can't wait to get home because we're gonna have a discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is what's gonna happen.
And then I prep all my responses, and then I get home and lose.
Yes.
Consistently lose. Mm-hmm. I'm the worst.
No matter how prepared a guy thinks they are,
I don't think
they're
I've
not.
Ever. I don't
they're
think
not.
I've ever won a disagree.
They're not. Chick's his first response to a fight is like, oh yeah, slam the door, he's out, and then he comes back and then he's ready to fight.
I haven't done that. I haven't done the leave. I have always wanted to do the leave.
Yeah
but I still gotta come home.
But isn't it funny though, it's like a play you've rehearsed 1,000 times when you argue with a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend. It's like, you know exactly what's going to happen. How she's going to respond, she knows how you're going to respond, and it's like, and this is the argument I made with you all the time, was why are we doing this? Because we know exactly what's going to happen.
We're wasting
we know the
time.
Outcome.
We
We're wasting time.
We,
yeah.
And we both would say, why don't we just skip to the end?
And
it'd be over.
But there's something
that
you have to. There's something that you have to do. Like mentally, you have to go through the motions to get to that. Okay, we're over it. This is done.
It's very odd.
Yeah.
I used to be scared of confrontation like that when I was younger, but now it's like I realize that you have to go through the bad to pull out the good.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, let's do this. Let's mm-hmm. do it right now. Let's get in the uncomfortable part of it, because at the end, everything will be better.
It'll be better. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
I used to hate that part, just like you did. I would try mm-hmm. anything not for you to be angry.
Well, and the more I tried not to be angry, the angrier I got.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
It's like trying not to laugh in church or something like that.
Exactly.
You want to laugh harder.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. What am I angry about? I'll tell you what.
Are you a fighter? Have you like guy like fight in bars or like
No. I was always weak, and it's point. I'm just weak, and I saw the point. I'm like, here's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna be missing teeth. I'm gonna be hurt. I'm gonna lose. I've been that angry, believe me.
Right, yeah.
And I feel that I still, even older, I'm 3 years away from 40. I still get that way if somebody, you can disrespect me all day. I don't care. I laugh. I'm dead inside in that regard. But when you start saying stuff to my wife, that's when I start seeing, because mm-hmm. I look at her as the good thing. She's the good of my life. And me, it's like, who cares? But when you come after her, then all of a sudden, that's when I start shaking.
Yeah.
But no.
What asshole's coming after your wife?
No, it's just she gets. Well, that's what happens when you're with somebody who's very attractive. So when guys, I think it makes even matters that there's, you can check her out. That's fine. She's a chick. She gets it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But when you come up to her and I'm right there, that's when I'm violently angry. Like, mm-hmm. dude, who does that? It's just disrespectful.
Yeah.
You
pretty
know?
Much.
And I feel like in that way they're measuring you as a man. So I just come right out and I'll just push her to the side and be like, I'm right here.
Yeah, that's good.
Because I want her to know, as dumb as it is, and this is the thing I hate most about women. There's some sort of primal code that's left over from caveman time that you can be the most rational. You can sit there like, honey, don't fight. But when you see your man stand up for you and then just whether will another man to submit, mm-hmm. that turns chicks on. And I've had discussions about this with my wife. The reason I'm in love with her is I think she makes the most sense out of any woman I've ever been with. So that's, I'm like, oh my God, I feel like we can be logically mm-hmm. entwined. Mm-hmm. I had discussions about her ex-boyfriend, who was a complete caveman, like a shaved caveman, and would just beat dudes to almost death with his fist. And I'd be like, how can you be with a man like that?
And she still
gets... It's just something. I don't know. And she still gets something. I'm like, you are a fucking idiot.
She talks about
him. There's
a
fine line, but there is a fine line because I think I've been on both ends of the extreme where there's a guy who's fucking punching holes in walls and acting like an asshole the majority of the time.
Right.
And then there's a guy who's just like, whatever, I don't care. Whatever happens. So there is a fine line. Like you said, like if you stand up for her, you're going to get blown hard is what's going to happen.
But, oh, yeah, no doubt.
So stupid.
It's the stupidest thing ever.
It's true.
And most dangerous for a man.
Like, yeah.
I'll stand up for you and lose an eye.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a blowjob at the end. Yeah. I wore my patch on my eye.
That's true. Yeah.
But Jess, I bet that's not as big a deal for you because your dad was so close and kind of your protector when you were younger that you've never felt like you needed it.
Yeah. That's a thing. That's probably one of my many relationship flaws is that I always think, oh, you're not going to take care of me? Then I'll fucking call my dad. I don't care. Or I'll figure it out. Because my dad was like, be able to take care of yourself. Be able to change your tire. Be able to change your oil. And be able to punch somebody in the face.
Talk about the Super Bowl.
Yeah. He always wanted me to know, like, I have a laminated piece of paper that would, like, fit in your pocket. And it was the year of the Super Bowl, who played and who the winner was. He's like, these are things you need to know. And would gave it when I was a teenager. And I still have it.
That's like information like terrorist leaders give their sleeper cell members in case like they have to be identified in another country. Like you must know who the champions of their sporting world are.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty
he was
much.
Just like he would always tell me things like that, like these are things that cool girls know, you know. So it
and it's dumb shit like that that does go the extra mile.
It does.
Guys.
Yeah.
Ryan, I'm gonna guess that your wife hit on you. First.
No.
No?
Okay. No. Okay. But I will admit I was a complete coward because
have you ever seen his wife?
No.
When I first saw
her. I heard she's a fox.
She's fucking hot.
When I first saw her, I remember my buddy set it up where I would be in the same room with her because he was in a band and he's watching. He sees me like go up to her and I'm standing next to her and he's playing bass and I look at her and I'm like, and then I retreated to the other guy. And I just look at him, he's just shaking his head. He's in the middle of a song, just shaking his head like that he was ashamed and he should have been. And I was so scared to ask her out, you know, because I was out of my element because I was using comedy to pick up chicks for so long.
Right.
And I was like, she hasn't seen me perform. I haven't shown her the magic. I don't have her under my spell.
Right.
Yeah.
So I changed venues and I set it up that I set aside tickets for you at a Cleveland show on a Sunday. I set aside tickets. It's more like, hey, there's free tickets available because no one's here. But I made it. If you say I set aside tickets, it's way more formal.
You wanted her, she feels special.
You wanted her to go to a Sunday show?
Well, it was a matter of scheduling and time because I was in town and I had to leave at a certain time, so I had to make my move.
Okay.
And luckily, I sprinkled some magic fairy dust in the air, and then that was we met my 30th birthday. So yeah, and so she just turned 30, so she's now as old as I was when I met her.
Gotcha. Seven years apart.
That sounds creepy, kind of.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. We're finally in the same decade for the first
Congratulations.
Time.
Congratulations.
Not really.
No, because now you can't say you have a 20-year-old wife. Yeah.
Yeah.
In her 20s, no.
No.
How long have you been married?
I've been married 3 years.
Oh, you haven't been married that long.
I know. It's
That's
awesome.
That's still cute. Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. First marriages are cute.
I told her I like her more because she's in her dirty 30s.
This is when they hit their... This is when they... I'm fucking 32. This is when women hit their sexual peak, is in their 30s.
Any more urban myths?
No, really?
Here we go.
That's what they say.
No? I told her that. I was like, you better hit your dirty 30s or you're going to be in your single 30s.
Wow. That's right. Well, you know, that's what Jimmy Pardo says on stage. He goes, you know, I'm not one of those comedians that would, you know, pick on their wives and insult them. I hear that a lot about how unhappy they are in their marriages. Mm-hmm. He goes, but I've got a great wife, but every now and then I'll get a check like from this gig that I've done this weekend and I'll take it home to her and I'll look at her and I'll go, check this out, fuck nut. You better start picking it up around here. Jimmy's going to go younger.
Nice.
He's
wow.
A good guy.
That's nice.
Jimmy's been on the podcast, hasn't he?
Jimmy likes the podcast.
Jimmy loves the podcast.
We love Jimmy's podcast.
We love Jimmy's podcast.
We were talking about Sullivan and Son earlier and which kind of roundabout gets me to my, I've seen dozens and dozens of comedy shows, and the one that always comes to mind of, hey, what's the best show you've ever been to, was Roy Wood Jr.
Yep.
Oh, he's so
funny. And his feature, a one Ryan Dalton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I went to that. I was there that weekend.
That's right.
And Ryan, you came out. I don't remember who the MC was, but introduced you. Mm-hmm. And I think you had your nice little hat on.
Yeah, the page boy newspaper.
You didn't say a word. And you just were smiling up there. And you had the crowd before you even said your first word.
Mm-hmm. Must have been stoned.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
No, I've never been that impressed with just stage presence.
Mm-hmm. You are very comfortable on stage. Not to a level that is... oh, look at this snarky asshole. But no, I mean,
That's true.
I mean, not overly confident. You're just very much at ease, and that puts everybody else at ease.
It took a long time to get that way, and there are moments when I'm not. Like, I won't lie. I mean, that's one of the reasons I went into a panic attack is this kid. I mean, this kid. It's a kid. He was, and he was really, I was laughing. Yeah. It wasn't like, haha, there's my comic buddy. I'm going to laugh at what he says. I was like, this dude's really funny. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in my head, I'm going, I have to be funnier.
So it's like nervous laughter.
And so I went up there. I got out of that rhythm that you saw me in. Mm-hmm. And two jokes in, I got to dial it back. I got to dial it back because I'm needing to be funny the second I breathe on stage.
Right, right.
As opposed to going, hey, guys in the front. Hey, you people over there. I was trying to smash him with jokes. And that happens from time to time.
Is there anything more terrifying than a comedian standing in the back of the room, and it's almost
watching another comedian
and honestly thinking, oh my God, this guy is
funny.
Well,
that's the Tim Wilson thing too. He said that every laugh is one less laugh that he's getting. He thinks that there's
I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah, sorry, I just fucked up your weekend.
I don't look at it like that. I can see why you would look at it, but I don't look at it like that.
I just always thought that was crazy that Tim, because Tim never really laughed at another comedian, but he would be respectful and be like, that was fucking funny. Yeah. You know, like that's his old school way of doing it.
I think like real comedians who see a comedian who's funny, they don't laugh. Right. It's almost like, oh, my God.
You're just shaking your head and smiling like, God damn, that's good.
That's funny.
Yeah. Right.
And you almost get, because I run into it on the show, like somebody on the show will say something funny, and I like, okay, I'll laugh, but then I'm thinking, man, I kind of hate that because I didn't think of it, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah.
It's like, ugh.
Well, you've also, that's too funny to laugh at.
That is too funny to laugh at.
Yeah.
She'll say something like that'll be funny. I'm like, oh, my God, that's.
Shut up.
And I kind of get mad.
You kind of get mad. Is this kid, what's that kid's name that you said is so funny, 19 years old?
Pete Davidson. Really
is he from
funny.
Indy?
No, he's from Brooklyn.
From New York.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's just like, it's mesmerizing because even I'm like, I wish I would have started comedy early. I'm wasting my life. Why would I go to Los Angeles? I have gray hair and I'm balding. Nobody wants to see that on television. No, it's like all the insecurities. Mm-hmm. It's like the war. It's like the orcs and Lord of the Ring 2. It's like, that's what all my insecurities look like. And they're just mounting this attack on my self-esteem when I'm in the back of the room, and that's what I'm seeing, and that's what pulled me out of that comfort zone. Because one of the things when you see comics performing, especially in a contest, they always get nervous, and I always play this game with them, and I love doing this to guys, especially when they're at the height of their nervous. I'm like, hey, you about to go on stage? Like, yeah, I'm after the next guy. I'm like, hey, I need you to do something for me. I want you to, whatever you do, don't think about how this opportunity could completely change your life for the better. Like the money that you'll make immediately, all those things that are nagging you, I don't want you to think about how that can make those problems go away immediately. Like this, like a snap of a finger. Don't think about how the great things, like how we'll never see each other in a crappy comedy club like this. Don't even begin to think about that. And then because it takes them out of that fear and they start laughing at the fact that they're being pulled out of their game.
Yeah.
Because I always say to comics in a contest, like, dude, just play your game. Live in that little world and play at that pace. Because the second you go out of the pace and you start sprinting as opposed to staying in your pace, everybody can see it. So just be in that and you're going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Play your game.
I know that you do the guy from the Fat Boy Slim video. What's that guy's
Christopher
name?
Walken.
Christopher Walken. Do you do Vince Vaughn? Seems like you could do a Vince Vaughn.
I think the voice, I could.
I don't know if there's
it.
Like a Midwest tie there and that's why you guys have that, but there's in your speech pattern and even when you're like I'm just like, God, he could fucking do that.
His speech pattern, he's from Chicago, so he's got a very Midwestern way.
Right.
And if you start, I've had the opportunity to hang out with him several times.
Do you love him?
Oh, he's the nicest guy in the world. He's like the one of the most genuine people ever. Super nice, super easy to talk to, but then you're also intimidated because he's an A-list movie star.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, I can't believe you're talking to me right now about stuff, and I love these movies. Mm-hmm. There is a weird dynamic
and
all the time.
He's even more attractive, which I'm sure that's not the thought process you have, is you're more attractive because, but it just seems like he's always been him. Like, he never sold out. Maybe he moved to LA to be around the people he needed to be around, but he always seems like he's the same guy he's always been. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you know what? It is that, and that's what you, when you start meeting more people that, like, that, you know, came by the show or people who are in television, and they say the same thing. I mean, it is that. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of people just in general who are complete. You're like, are you a robot? Like, right. Do you have batteries inside you? Mm-hmm. And he's just not one of those people. He's just a genuine, good person.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, without a doubt. I was happy to hear it, too, because you don't want to meet your heroes and they stink.
Right. Oh, God, that's the worst. I can't imagine that.
That seems to be sort of a recipe for the cool guys like him that start producing other stuff, because Will Ferrell, you know, he seems like a pretty cool guy deep down. I've heard some stuff with him too, and he produces other little things for other people. You know, that seems to be a recipe for the cool guys out there. I don't know, maybe I'm just, those are only the only two examples I have.
Like a pay it forward type.
Yeah, or take care of the other guys in the business who deserve it.
Probably did that for them. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
How crazy would it be for some executive to sit around going, you know what we need for this movie? Is Ryan Dalton.
I would literally pass out.
Because they do that about Vince. I mean, we need Vince Vaughn for this.
Oh, believe me.
No matter what.
You know? But
you have dreams, and like you have these big, and like, man, I hope this happens. And I remember when I started, I had all these bright ideas. Well, that's the reason for the panic attack, is like those dreams and my eight, I feel like they become small, and they're not even dreams. They're just glimpses of an idea I had when I was a kid, not even a reality that I can touch. Mm-hmm. And that's when the shortness of breath starts kicking in. Like, what am I getting? I'm a clown. I'm just a clown. I'm a traveling clown. That's all I'm ever going to be. Like, you know.
I don't know what it is, but your confidence is appealing. There's a lot of comedians who are overly confident. Not that you're overly confident, but your confidence is, like when Jason said, I was at that show when you walked out on stage and you just smiled. Then there's a certain, that's a charisma that a lot of people don't have and can't do that. And that you did it and you still had us. Because there's guys who will walk out on stage, and if they did that, I'd be like, fuck you, I'm leaving. You know? And it's just, but I think that, I don't know. I hope good things for you, because I think you've got it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And I could be like the next door neighbor. I'd be like the wacky next door neighbor.
I would appreciate you to be the...
some catchphrase like...
I'm writing a script right now where you'd be perfect for
the
that
cats
wacky the, next door neighbor.
Cats in the trash again, Brian. Yeah. You know, something like that.
Right.
No good?
Well, that's probably okay.
Okay.
How about Uncle, who's a little the wild card?
You never know what he's going to do.
Yeah. I think of Harry's dad in Night Court.
There you go.
Remember he was the dad in the Addams Family. I can't remember his name.
Raul Julia?
Not Raul Julia from the movie. I'm talking
John
the television
Astin
show. Yeah, that's it.
John Astin.
John Astin was amazing in Night Court, and that's
what I don't remember.
I love
him.
That
I
show.
Yeah.
Because he was a guy who would tell these ridiculous stories, and then everybody would be like, that didn't happen. And then later a picture would
something
show up.
Something would show up.
Like,
yeah,
how are you with this person?
Yeah.
I love that character.
It's the wild card.
Night Court.
I'm surprised I didn't grow up to like
blondes. Oh, me too. I loved it growing
Marky
up.
Marky Post. I'm surprised I wasn't a blonde guy.
Oh, that was yours? You liked Marky Post?
She was something in that show.
She was cute.
You.
Yeah.
Hi.
I liked her.
Dan Fielding.
Yeah,
John
Larroquette was probably my first crush as a kid. Oh. John Larroquette and Donnie Wahlberg right there together. Love them.
Love John Larroquette.
Well, you know who the first on the first season of Night Court? We've talked about this before.
Yeah, we did.
Well, it wasn't Marky Post. It was a girl named Ellen Foley. And she was a little squirrelier looking, but she was a great
little
actress.
You're right.
But she is the original vocal on Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
Can you
Meatloaf.
Fucking believe that?
I can't believe
it's
that.
Not, that's nuts. He just
mind.
Blew your
it
mind.
Just
not,
blew my mind.
It's not Carla DeVito.
Exploded.
It is on the video,
yeah.
But it's Ellen Foley on the
wow.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
That is
crazy.
Insane.
I love Meatloaf.
Maybe I do too.
We did get Meatloaf.
Oh, that was the first rock album that I knew. I listened to it over and over and over again. Knew all the
let
words.
Me sleep on
Bat Out of Hell. Yeah.
What do you listen to? You listen to music? You
my
like music?
First album, my first and always the Black Crowes.
If you
Crowes.
Say the Michael Stanley Band, I'm leaving.
Well, I no. We
the North Coast.
The Black Crowes are always, because that was my favorite. Mm-hmm. My first rock and roll album, I think, was Creedence Clearwater's Chronicles, Volume 1. Mm-hmm. You know, their greatest hits. But the Black Crowes, that was always it for me.
Mm-hmm. Fix that, Ryan. You guys talk among yourselves.
Being a North Ohio guy, I assume you like the Black Keys.
Yeah, they were. I mean, dude, they came out of Akron. They were discovered in Akron. It wasn't just like, hey, we're a band from Akron. We got no. They were like, got discovered by at this place called the Lime Spider, which no longer exists. And they,
what a great name!
Yeah, it was an awesome place. It was a great venue, but they got discovered there, and they were always very much were from Akron. And then later on, once you know they got more successful, they moved to New York. I mean, Nashville, and LA.
Yeah,
But we were always like, they're from Ohio, so that's we always loved them for that.
Did you see them in their early days?
Not the earliest days, but I did see them when like they were playing. Like I remember when a certain cigarette company had a tour. I think it was Camel. They would get a or whatever, and they would have bands come through for free. I saw them in a 1,000 seat venue, and it was very attainable before they're doing stadiums.
Right.
But and a lot of people, and this is what really started to irritate me and draw the line when people say things are sellouts or not. They were getting their songs early on in a lot of commercials. Mm-hmm. And people were like, that's messed up. I'm like, do you know how hard it is to make money in a band, let alone being a comedian?
Right.
Like, you can't sell albums anymore. So, you're going to put your songs in commercials. And now a lot of bands I love, like, for instance, Queens of the Stone Age, they have a Mountain Dew commercial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I love this song, but I didn't hate them for it. I'm like, you got to get paid.
I love Queens of the Stone Age.
I love Queens of the Stone Age.
But that's how so many people discover music now is almost through commercials and endorsements and stuff, because the fucking attention span is this long, and they're like, oh, I heard three words. I'm going to Google that, and I'm going to download that song, and now it's my favorite.
Right.
For the next 3 days.
The only band that I disrespected for a second was Zeppelin when they had their Rock and Roll was the song for Cadillac.
Mm. But
the thing is, of all the Zeppelin songs, I never liked that song to begin with.
Yeah.
I thought that song was their lamest song.
Yeah.
Mm. Outside of that, even that song's still great, but I mean, I just didn't like that song that much to begin with.
Mm-hmm. What about when Eminem did it?
Rock and Roll?
No, when Eminem did the
Chrysler commercial.
I just thought it was funny because he was in that initial commercial and you never saw
him. No, you never saw him again, ever again. Yeah,
he was during the Super Bowl.
Now, Ryan, I know you were in Cleveland. You still live in Cleveland, but leaving soon. But there was a show. Was it the Maxwell Show?
That's right.
Did you go on that now and then with those guys?
I was like a host, hosting at comedy clubs. And these guys were nice enough to take a guy who was hosting. I was still, very much in the in the larval stage of being a comedian, trying to figure it out. And they let me come on and sit in their radio show from time to time. And I mean, it was never lost on me because I knew I could start to see that like talk radio as a whole isn't on the FM side. I mean, it's just not really prevalent across the country anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's getting smaller and smaller. And Cleveland has one of their biggest, if not their biggest station is, primary talk with rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always like, I can't believe these guys are letting this me. I'm waiting for them to kick me out of the studio because I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, our guy Marty here was kind of consulting for those guys, I know.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you knew that.
I did know that. Okay. I used to go in his office and they'd talk about it all the time.
Good. Yeah.
One of the early radio stations I used to listen to when I was just a little baby DJ. I wasn't even on the radio.
You little
yet.
Baby DJ?
MMS, just with Kid Leo. And
oh, yeah.
All
that's
those
when
guys.
It was in its glory days.
Yeah. But it was great because you'd hear Prince and then Zeppelin and then something else that would blow your mind. It was just a great radio station.
Yeah, it was amazing at that time. And now it's they're a rock station, but it's not
right.
They're not breaking new music. They're not melting your face with stuff you've never heard before.
Right. Well, I mean, I've always said that. Gone are the days when people sit around and say, I hope they play my favorite song. My most favorite song ever comes up next because they're holding all their songs in their hand and they just dial it up and play it. Radio by and large, as a musical. A way to deliver music to people, I don't think it's not that way anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't listen to FM on that side. I found different ways of just being exposed to new music.
It's more unique. You need more unique programming.
So you're going to leave for L.A. What are you going to miss about Cleveland?
Well,
everything.
Well, honestly, my house, man.
You guys going to sell it or?
We actually, rent that was it? Her thing is like, we're not selling our house. And I agree with her, but I also like, we're not selling this thing we have a mortgage on. But, you know, we put a bunch of money down. I mean, I'm paying $900 on a mortgage on a house. I mean,
wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, wow,
but
yeah.
Still, that's $900 that you still got to pay. That's another bill for right. a place mm-hmm. you're not going to be staying.
Sure.
And, I'm going to miss that because I like having a yard. I love having a two-car garage. This is the first time in my life I've ever had a car and then had a place to put a car, like mm-hmm. its own little place. Mm-hmm. And I've had the house now for 2 years. It's still not lost on me when I pull into my garage mm-hmm. space. I love it.
Because I'm I am right there with you. Like, nothing makes me happier.
You press the button, yeah. Oh, the door mm-hmm. went up again.
I get a thrill mm-hmm. that is not lost since the first mm-hmm. day I have. I can't tell you how many trees have fallen on my cars and streets. Mirrors been knocked off cars. I've had how many tonnage of snow I've had to scrape off uh-huh. my car. Uh-huh. I one time opened my car door, and as I'm opening it, just with a little pressure, because it was one of those freezing rains that happened overnight, so your car is encased in this fine but yet thick layer of ice. I went to open it. The handle just ripped off in my hand.
Oh,
just popped just from sheer freezing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I can't take this parking in the street. So that is what I'm really going to miss, because you're lucky to get one garage space in an apartment building in LA.
Right.
And that
right.
means probably going to have to park on the street and right. get my bumpers kicked in. And that's going to make me mental.
Right. So are you going to drive across country?
You're going to have to. You got to move
yeah.
your stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess the one obstacle you'd have to think about is what you're going to do with a lease car plus a regular car, because right. I imagine we're going to have to tow the lease car behind.
Right, right.
Those are the mileage.
Yeah,
and
I'll drive separately, or she'll drive separately in my car.
So this is a done deal.
No, we don't. It's right now the schematics, and we have to really talk and make the commitment. But I'm starting to. I'm really starting to look at the logistics of making it really happen.
Because you'll be the third. I'm going to say friend. Of mine, who said, I'm moving to Los Angeles in the past 6 months, and the other two didn't do it. They bowed out.
Well, it's I'm at that point where it's like I'm only making horizontal moves, and I need to make more vertical moves. Mm-hmm. And everything I'm doing is horizontal. And even if it's the last thing I do and it doesn't work out, she said it her best. She's like, if you don't do it, you're just going to look at me and you're going to resent me every day. You're going to resent me like I'm the reason you didn't do this stuff. And you know what? She's right.
She's right.
I will. Factually, I believe it's not true. But inside me, subconsciously, I'm like, man, if you weren't around, I would have just done it.
I'd have done it already, yeah.
Because when I was out there for 3 months, the fear of doing it was replaced by the confidence of being there.
Right.
Like
there's something about being there. I got it. That there in New York, there is something about being there.
I mean, I was on shows with guys that are A-listers, movie stars, people that are the biggest comics, and I'm standing shoulder to shoulder, and I'm not only holding my own, I'm getting people coming up to me after the show going like, dude, you were really funny, and you were hosting, and usually the hosts are terrible, and I was just like, you know, it was that affirmation I needed to go, I can do this. I've got jokes. I have an act. Mm-hmm. I've got confidence.
Yeah.
I can beat up these young toughs around here.
Mm-hmm. I can go out on Sunset Boulevard, Strip, whatever the hell it is.
Because a lot of those comics out there are these nerdy kids with flannels and these horn-rimmed glasses.
Yeah.
And I'll do two for flinching all day on these dweebs.
You could beat Aziz Ansari's ass easily. I mean, he's just a little tiny guy.
No
right?
kidding. Put him in my pocket. Take him home.
He's tiny.
He's a little guy.
Would you move to L.A.?
You know, I've always thought about it, to, you know, go on a couple of auditions and see if I could act or whatever, or some character actor or something at this point. But I just don't. I mean, it just doesn't. Practically, it doesn't make any sense because my family's here and everyone who I am friends with are here. But I do have a lot of friends who live in L.A. But still,
okay, everything, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. This show, the podcast is over. Bob and Tom's over.
Monetarily, it doesn't make any sense. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't go out there. I would literally have to go out there on nothing.
Really?
Yeah. I would, yeah.
Huh.
I would think. I mean, because what would you need? Well, Ryan, you know, you need this. You've got a couple $100,000 saved probably to move out to L.A.
Oh, $3 million. $3 million. I mean, I'm... Am I driving? No, I'm having my driver drive my
sure,
stuff out there.
That's right. Right. That's right.
No, and that's the real part of another anxiety is when you go to Los Angeles. All I know from comedy is every week when I work at that calendar, I don't get upset because I'm not performing. I get upset because there goes my money.
Right.
You know, I go
right.
on the road. That's how comics make their money. Now, when you're in Los Angeles, you're lucky to get $15 for a spot,
yeah,
which is
exactly.
humiliating.
Yeah,
and
sometimes you have to
really?
Pay them.
Yeah. Oh, there's you don't make money. You don't make money. I mean, and everybody gets. I got a check one time for hosting at the Hollywood Improv for $13.23. I was like, this is literally scientifically the most insulting amount of money you can pay someone to do anything.
A little bit more.
Anything with and change, I think, mm-hmm. is insulting.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not even breaking the $15 mark.
Right,
you're
that's
at
true
the 13.
You couldn't round up.
Like,
yeah.
that's an annoying amount of money to have in your wallet.
$13.23?
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't. And that's how it is out there. You don't make any money at all. And it's a show, you're showcasing for free. So in my dumb mind, I'm like, I guess I'll audition for stuff. So maybe if I get that, it can supplement my income, you know, with this unbelievable yeah. face and this charisma.
That's true.
You know, next to the most beautiful people in the entire world with the greatest hair ever.
Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that I could go out there and if I got to the right audition and got to the right, but... You know, it's all timing, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
True.
I don't know. Would you move to Los Angeles? No.
Fuck no, he wouldn't move to Los Angeles.
He has a lovely home. I had a lovely meal in his home the other night. Jason?
He's talking about how funny your kids are.
That young one.
That Katie yeah. is, she's going to be.
What is it about the younger ones?
I don't know. Sophie's the same way.
Christy's
same way.
Yep. The young girl, there's something about him.
Here's what we'll do, Ryan. I will quit the Bob and Tom show. Oh. I'll quit the podcast. We'll go out to L.A. and we'll move in together.
Name?
Ashley.
Ashley, that's right.
You
that's
leave
right.
her here for another two or three months. We'll go out there and make money.
Ashley's going to get a good job at like a plastic surgeon's office as a nurse and help, and then she can support you guys.
And then totally run off with a doctor. That's going to happen. Yeah, I just know it.
Dr. 90210.
Because yeah. she's like, oh, I need a nose job. And then she'd get that job, and this doctor just like, mm-hmm. you know what? Here's your gift. Here's your bonus free. And the next thing
and
you know,
now here's,
I'm out.
And here's your other bonus.
Here's your tip.
Yeah. yeah.
See what I'm saying there? I'm talking about the doctor giving the penis to you.
I have that real fear now. I have that real fear now. She goes to the Cleveland Clinic and there's all these rich doctors around and I'm like,
yeah,
man, I know that she's going to get frustrated with some money and then she'll see this guy with all this money and a great car and yeah. I'll be, she'll be Miss Sanjiani.
Celebrating Ramadan yeah. somewhere with
name not changed for effect.
Right.
How do we find out more about Ryan Dalton?
Well, there's this little thing called Twitter. It's uh-huh. out there. It's
what?
At Ryan Dalton. I got in early, got my name.
Right.
And, my website's theryandalton.com. And right now, if you go to theryandalton.com, there's information on how I'm going to just give you my album, You Were Funny Too, for free. I'll just
wow.
give it to you.
No kidding.
I will give it to you.
Give it to him.
Here That's you go. Crazy. Free album. Boom. You're welcome.
And you're welcome, Ryan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jess.
You're welcome.
Weirdest show ever. Thank you, Jason.
What the hell happened there? You think?
I don't know.
Well, they're not going to hear that beginning part.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to hear some of it.
Part of it.
Maybe they can hear it someday.
Nope.
We should release that with 46.
With 46.
46 going to die.
46.
It's a 6-foot death.
5 minutes of 69. Hey, now.
Is that all it takes?
That's all it takes.
You know what you're doing. 5 minutes.
5 minutes is an eternity if that's what you're doing.
Another dark one here.
This is Bob.
Oh fuck.
What? It's Bob Schneider. Bob Schneider music.
I like the guitar work, but
all right. Yeah, it is kind of sad lyrically. Yeah. Okay. All right. Maybe it is a little sad.
Oh my God.
I can just picture me with two hands around a scotch glass, staring in it.
under the marquee at the Comedy Store.
Worst.
Hey, didn't you used to be Ryan Dalton?
Man, after that move from Cleveland, man.
I don't know what you were thinking.
Oh man, I'm going to go home and just shake myself to sleep again.
Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody!